everyone. Haven't seen you in a while, Chris. As I was sitting here during the first period, I was just really feeling the joy of the Sangha, treasure, and what a privilege it is for us to get together in this space and to sit together. When things start getting a little ephemeral and wispy, you start appreciating them more and you don't take them for granted so much. And so tonight, to me, the Sangha treasure truly seemed very precious, very like a treasure. And so thank you for coming out tonight and sharing this with me. So, I don't know, for some reason sickness has been on my mind lately. And so I thought I would share with you a couple of koans about sickness and look at what they might have to teach us about how our practice carries us through difficult and disrupted times. And the koans, just seemingly by coincidence, concern very foundational teachers. One of them is Master Matsu, who was the Dharma grandfather of Rinzai, who founded one of the great Rinzai school that exists today. And the other one involves our own founding teacher, Dongshan Liangzhi, the founder of the Chinese Soto school. So let me talk about Master Ma first, Master Matsu, who was a worthy progenitor of the Rinzai line. He was very into responding with shouts, and that deafened his students to try to make them see the truth. But like everyone in time, Master Ma grew very sick and was bedridden, perhaps on his deathbed, and his attendant came in to see him and asked, "How is your venerable health today, Master?" Or another translation, "How is your venerable state today, Master?" And Master Ma said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." Now, that response is a bit cryptic, unless you have the book available to tell you about sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha. But the footnote in the book says that a sun-faced Buddha lives for 1,800 years, and a moon-faced Buddha lives only for one night. So naturally, when we look at this, our comparing mind goes, well, the sun-faced Buddha is a long-lived Buddha, and the moon-faced Buddha is a very short-lived Buddha. And that is the natural way our mind functions. Long and short, good and bad, right and wrong, And that's the way it should function. That's not a problem at all. But there's another way of looking at things, that our habit of constantly using our comparing mind can obscure. And so one of the ways I illustrate this is, what if I were to ask you, are you too big or too small? You would be quite justified in saying, well, compared to what? It's a meaningless question. Compared to an ant, Bokashu is a great mountain. Compared to a great mountain, Bokashu is an ant, or even less than an ant. Compared to a moon-faced Buddha, a sun-faced Buddha is very long-lived. Compared to the age of the earth, his existence is hardly a nanosecond. So all of these are about comparisons. But what Master Ma is pointing to is directly to reality before our mind starts its natural process of making comparisons. And that way of looking at things, Bokashu is just Bokashu. He's not big, he's not small, he's not right, he's not wrong. Anyone who wants to understand Bokashu in this way just has to open their eyes and look, and there he is, beyond any comparisons. So there's a number of ways, you know, we try to illustrate this point. I don't do much teaching of Zazen these days, but when I did, I used to like to tell people, you know, Zazen is kind of like driving your car down a very smooth highway at 60 miles an hour, and you just keep driving your car smoothly, and sometimes the scenery is beautiful, but that doesn't mean you're driving your car well. And sometimes the scenery, especially if you're on the Jersey Turnpike driving through North Jersey, is not wonderful at all. It's really ugly, but that doesn't mean you're driving your car badly. You just drive your car at 60 miles an hour. You just let thoughts go and come back to your reference point over and over again. And whatever the scenery of your Zazen is, that's fine. That's just the scenery. You just keep driving that car. Master Joshu had another way of showing the same point. So when a new monk came in and said, Joshu asked him, well, all right, how long have you been practicing? And he said, oh, I've just entered this monastery. I'm a total newcomer. And Joshu said, have a cup of tea. And then another monk came in, and Joshu said, how long have you been practicing? And the monk said, 25 years. Joshu looked at him and said, have a cup of tea. And the head monk at the monastery came up to the master and said, Master, I don't understand. That beginner came in with a question, and you told him to have a cup of tea. And then this very experienced monk came in, and you told him to have a cup of tea. And Joshu said, head monk, yes, Master, have a cup of tea. So this is one of the perspectives that we encounter in our practice, and we encounter it directly in our Zazen. The fact that we're having a Zazen full of thoughts and maybe anxiety, doesn't mean we're doing bad zazen. The fact that we're having a peaceful, quiet period, very nice, but it doesn't mean we're doing good zazen. We just do zazen. We just have a cup of tea. And this side of things is very wonderful to connect with, because this is where we find our composure. Whether we think we have brilliant and inspired political leadership and well qualified to deal with a national emergency, well, then we just have a cup of tea. And if we believe the opposite of that, well, we just have a cup of tea. This is, as Uchiyama Roshi would say, this is the scenery of our lives. But if we're Zen practitioners, we just keep practicing our lives, you know, one day at a time, moment after moment. Well, how do we do that? And this is where the next koan comes in, also featuring a great master on his deathbed, Master Dongshan. And a monk came to see him, and the monk said, "Master, I fear you are sick." And Dongshan said, "You should know that there is one who is not sick." The monk said, "Oh, does the one who is not sick take care of you?" Dongshan said, "I have the privilege of taking care of him or her. I have the privilege of taking care of him." And the monk said, "How is it when you take care of the one who is not sick?" Dongshan said, "Then I do not see that he has any illness." So this koan gets at the other side of things, how we in fact drink that delicious, flavorless Dharma tea that is always being served to us moment after moment. Because truth is that my little driving the car image is not quite complete. So yes, if everything's a nice smooth highway, you just drive your car at 60 miles an hour and the scenery is what it is. But let's say you get off at an exit and all of a sudden you're on a dirt road. You keep driving your car at 60 miles an hour, yeah, you're driving real bad. Doesn't matter whether the scenery is nice or not. You are not taking care of your driving. You're not, you're endangering yourself, and you're possibly endangering other people as well by driving recklessly because you haven't made an adjustment to the changing circumstances. So in a strange way, just driving your car really means you drive appropriately on the highway that you're on. You take care of your driving. You take care of the one who is not sick. You take care of this sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, who is just exactly as he or she is. We get a great example of that, you know, in the altar that we have in our zendo. Some of you might know the altar basically is just a symbolic depiction of reality as it is. So back in the ancient times, they believed there were four elements, earth, air, fire and water. And you know, it's a good thing there were only four, because like today there's like 120 or whatever. That would make for a very crowded altar. But we just have four on our altar. We have the incense, which is fire, the flowers, which are earth. Did I say the fire was incense? The incense is air. It purifies the air, and the candle is fire. And the water is simply the water offering that sits at the foot of the figure. So you have the elements that were thought to compose all of reality right there on the altar. And above them, traditionally, there's that figure with the knife, Manjusri. And his job is to make you pay attention, to cut off your delusions and look at reality. No, you're not driving on a nice, smooth highway anymore. You're on a dirt road. Pay attention. Pay attention. Pay attention. And as Bokushu, or anyone who has served in the office of Chidin, who takes care of the altar, can tell you, the altar is really a pain in the tail, because it's constantly disintegrating. It's constantly getting dirty. The flowers need to be changed. The water evaporates, and it needs to fill, at least traditionally, it needs to fill the vessel to the tippy top. So when a day goes by, it's already gone down too low. The ash from the incense gets on the black lacquer surface, looks lousy, and so it needs constant care and attention. We constantly, if our job is to tend the altar, we constantly have to take care of the one who is not sick, the one who is pure and complete and empty, arising and disintegrating moment by moment according to causes and conditions. So it's pretty obvious we're coming up to a time of change in our lives. We don't know how long for. Don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of uncertainty. And we can learn from the aspects of reality that these two great masters were pointing to. We can find composure in the sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha, which is always just exactly as it is. And what is it that is just exactly as it is? Well, I don't know. And neither did Shakyamuni know. And so oddly enough, it is a not knowing and being with things exactly as they are that we can find our true composure. In other words, not knowing is not a reason for freaking out. It's a way of opening and seeing how we can take care of the one who is not sick, how we can be of service. And I really don't like that phrase, be of service, because, you know, it sort of implies, like, you know, heroic effort. But it can really be just as simple as always using a tissue when you touch your face. And taking care to wash your hands. And finding the real cheerfulness of not knowing and not having a clue, and sharing that open, cheerful feeling with other people who might be freaking out. It might not be as used to not knowing as we Zen practitioners are. So where are we heading? What's going to happen? That I don't know. And of course, times like these make me realize I never did know. I just thought I knew. So we're coming into a different time, a different way of practicing, a different way of sharing the Dharma and sharing our lives with each other, taking care of ourselves and taking care of others. And one thing I'm extremely confident of is I have complete faith in this practice. I have complete faith in driving my car appropriately, whether it's on a beautiful, smooth highway or the nastiest dirt road that the Department of Highways hasn't fixed in years. I will just drive my car as best I can, and the scenery will be exactly what it will be. Sentient beings.